This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Somewhere to go, but won't you make yourself at home and stay with me? And don't you ever leave.
Lay down, Sally, and rest here in my arms. Don't you think you want someone to talk to? Lay down, Sally,
no need to leave so soon.
I've been trying all night long just to talk to you.
Good morning, everybody. Little Eric Clapton this morning, huh? Keep us up. Up and bushy-tailed. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. I am Paul Molloy. It's Friday again, January 23rd. Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Heather Kays of the Heartland Institute. It's our weekly discussion on the shape of American education, with an emphasis on things like school choice, and vouchers, and homeschooling and charter schools. We think it's the most important topic in the country these days. And also, Heather is going to be talking to us in context with the President's State of the Union speech Tuesday night. So do not miss that. And pro-lifers descend on Washington yesterday, the 42nd anniversary of Roe versus Wade. We're going to talk a little bit about all of that. And in our Freedom Works ultimate top 10 list, the top 10 worst states if you smoke cigarettes. Worst states if you smoke. So stay tuned for that. Freedom Works. We come to you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network to promote the concept of libertarianism. Our motto is, the more individual freedom that you have, the better off we all are. The more content you're going to be, the more fulfilled, the happier. And that's why we push it so much. Libertarian with a small L, not the Libertarian Party necessarily, though they share many of the views of the small L libertarian. But individual liberty, as you were promised in our Constitution and Declaration of Independence. Anyway, glad you're with us. You want to call in? Our toll-free number is 866-826-1340, 866-826-1340. And you can go to our website, find out more about our show, and access previous programs there. Very easy to do. TheFreedomWorks.com, TheFreedomWorks.com. Well, some things going on yesterday in other parts of the world that were a little bit shaking things up. On the one hand, Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah has passed away. He had launched a new era for U.S. officials to negotiate amid the spreading influence of Iran and the ongoing battle to roll back the trouble that the ISIS groups are making in Iraq and Syria. He was 90 years old. And he was a friend of the United States. Along with the collapse of the U.S.-supported government in Yemen, this is bad news for the United States. There's more instability in that part of the world. Abdullah's death, removes another obstacle for Iran's expanse in the Middle East, according to some people. One former diplomat said that Tehran's influence could now be seen in four Middle Eastern capitals, Yemen, Baghdad, Damascus, and even in Beirut, Lebanon. And Lebanon, from time to time, has been a place that we felt we have some support. But I don't know who is going to end up taking over things there. You know, all of that is a family, tribal kind of situation in Saudi Arabia. apparently there's going to be a relative that's about 79 years old but is in failing health. He'll be an interim leader. And so anyway, that is for the United States, it comes at a bad time. However, things like that never come, I guess, at a good time. In the meantime, Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, is coming over here on March 3rd to talk to Congress. It's a little bit of a pushback to Obama. He's being invited by House Speaker John Boehner. Boehner made the announcement yesterday. Obama does not even plan to meet with Netanyahu when he comes over. They are not the best of friends. But Boehner had invited Netanyahu to speak to the Congress about the threat coming from Iran. And I guess protocol would have had Boehner going over to the White House and knocking on the door and telling Obama that he planned to invite Netanyahu to make the address. They are usually coordinated with the White House and the State Department. But they don't have to be. Netanyahu wants heavier sanctions on Iran, and apparently President Obama does not. And this is, even though he says it's not a stick in the eye, it is a bit of a poke in the eye to President Obama by Boehner. Now, this comes a day after Obama, or at least Boehner announced his invitation to Netanyahu, a day after Obama's State of the Union address. And in that address, Obama threatened to veto a bill backed by the Republicans and some Democrats for more sanctions against Iran. So, a little game of cat and mouse continues. Anyway, we're going to take our break. We're going to have Heather Case join us. We're going to talk a little bit about the State of the Union address in context with education, along with some other things with Heather. So don't go away.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Frozen. In that instant when the puck appears in the back of the net. In that moment when jaws open in astonishment. In that second, everything stands still. But the next second, you are the energy that shatters the stillness. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the thunder.
Lightning single game tickets are on sale now. Visit TampaBayLightning.com or call 800-745-3000.
Tom O'Brien is on the TAN Talk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the TAN Talk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Show me the money.
It's the Employment Opportunity Hour with Gene Hodge every Thursday night from 7 until 8.
So the purpose of the show is to help you out there to find something that you enjoy doing instead of a job. And at the start of the show, I normally give out a formula, which I know will guarantee you to find the type of job that you want right now.
Find out the formula to an enjoyable job with Gene Hodge's Employment Opportunity Hour every Thursday night from 7 until 8 here on the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy a lifestyle to fit your needs. From independent living, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing. Our exciting independent lifestyle is the perfect combination of freedom, comfort, and security. Enjoy total independence with peace of mind. Our independent lifestyle includes chef-prepared meals in our beautiful waterfront dining room. A continental breakfast. All utilities, including cable and telephone. Housekeeping with linen service. service, scheduled transportation, including trips for shopping, local restaurants, theater, and more. Our activities program is second to none. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy affordable luxury waterfront senior living with a $1 million view. Call today, 727-445-4069, and discover where caring, compassionate service really makes the difference.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works, and Heather Case is joining us this Friday. Heather, of course, is of the Heartland Institute, and we have her join us every Friday to talk a little bit about what is going on in the world of school choice, charter schools, homeschools, and all the good things that help, in the long run, educate our students better. Heather is also the managing editor of School Reform News, a periodical of the Heartland Institute. And Heather, I know you want to talk a little bit about President Obama's Tuesday night State of the Union speech as it affects education. So go right ahead.
Yes, I really only have a couple of things to say because there weren't really that many education policy topics brought up during the State of the Union. But one of the things that really stood out to me was that there wasn't a single mention of K through 12 education in the entire thing. No mention of Common Core standards, no bragging about that wonderful federally backed program. There really was only a mention of the free community college proposal.
Right.
The first point to be made there, of course, is that it is not actually free. It would be funded by the taxpayers. On the state level and the federal level, and it's expected to cost billions of dollars over the first 6 to 10 years alone. Not only that, the program also, obviously, logically speaking, every degree that's given out, the more that are given out, the less valuable each one becomes. And there is this idea in this country that everyone has to go to college, and everyone is intended to go to college, which I don't think is true. I think for a lot of people, it makes more sense to attend a trade school or become an apprentice or do something not because they aren't smart enough to attend college, but because it's more suited to the type of career that they would like to pursue or one that is actually in demand, such as welding. There are lots of jobs like that are out there that no one really seems to be pushing. Those positions need to be filled, and instead we're going to have tons of people with psychology and English degrees and no jobs to take.
Do you think President Obama knew that this community college idea was going to go nowhere? Because, I mean, it's dead on arrival in the Congress. They're not about to extend. I think it's like a $10 billion a year program, $60 billion or something over 10 years. I'm not sure exactly how that all transpired, but Most of the kids that go to community college are being subsidized anyway now, correct?
That is correct. Most kids can get money to help them to go to community college in the first place. So I think that this is one of those things that sounds nice. It sounds like a nice thing to say. We're going to give kids money to go to college. Who can be mad at that? And I'll tell you who. I can be mad at that. Because it's wasting taxpayers' money, and you're not even giving anybody a degree at the end of the day. You're basically giving somebody training wheels and not the bicycle.
And it's the same, right? And it's the same old thing. You're supposed to, in 2 years, maintain a certain grade, and this and that and the other thing. And you know that thing, that kind of maintenance and overseeing, never works. They're not. They wouldn't be able to carry it off. I think they all knew that it was just something to throw out there. I mean, because if you give it any thought, it just it doesn't make a lot of sense. And it's like throwing something up that nobody's really been thinking about as an issue, you know, and making it an issue in a way. I mean, who's been talking about, hey, we've got to figure out a better way to fund community colleges? I don't think so, right?
No. And really, the point to be made there is that if this goes through, it's actually bad for people who want to attend community college because the price will most likely go up same way that four-year universities jacked up the prices once they knew they had a never-ending supply of state and federal money coming in their direction.
And like you said, and I think you made a very good point, he doesn't give any moment to K through 12 education. And he didn't talk at all about the testing program, the federal Common Core program. Not a word. You know, I guess he wants to, and in a more general sense, he was throwing up the same old stuff, you know, about equal pay for equal work and raising the minimum wage and figuring out a way to tax the wealthier people because supposedly it will make the middle-income people better off. And all of the things, it was just sort of a nice rehash. I mean, he makes a great speech. He reads a teleprompter very well. But it just seemed like the same old Obama. And he just kind of ignored the fact that his party got trounced in November. And that, you know, he's facing, he was out there looking at an entirely different Congress than the last time he gave this speech. But it's just like it just kind of went in one ear and out the other as far as he was concerned.
Yeah, I do think that you make a really good point that the community college proposal doesn't really stand a chance of actually going anywhere. So that might have just been something to say to try to get people excited or to have people pat him on the back for trying to do well in education.
Now, we've got a couple of other things moving on that Heather wants to talk about. One of the things is that this is National School Choice Week, or it's coming up, and they're here in Florida. There are many things that are going on, and Heather sent along some things about school choice options in Florida. You want to talk a little bit about that, Heather?
Yeah, so School Choice Week is held nationally every single year. It's the end of this month. It's the last week of this month. And according to schoolchoiceweek.com, there are 1,450 events going on in Florida alone. Mm. It's 11,000 events nationwide. So I think that this is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, celebrations of school choice ever to be held.
Boy, that's good news. That's really good news. Now, you don't hear a lot about that in the mainstream press. I'm glad you're bringing it up. So all of the states have things like this going on. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And some of them are panel discussions or screenings of movies related to school choice. I know Heartland in Illinois is hosting an event at a bowling alley. That's really just a way to bring families in and talk to parents about what school choice actually means.
Yeah, they can kind of talk about it between frames. That would be a great idea there, yeah. Well, you know, anything that gets it into the public consciousness, as I said before you came on again this morning, it's the biggest, most important issue we really have, educating kids correctly in this country. And I think because we've had so many problems, maybe that's one of the reasons that it is coming again to the forefront. Now, you also, by the way, we're speaking with Heather Kays. We speak with her every Friday. She is good enough to join us and talk about what is going on with education in the United States. She is of the Heartland Institute and also managing editor of their School Reform News. Now, one of the other things, Heather, and that is this charter school freedom. Tell us a little bit about this request for traditional schools, charter school freedom.
So there is a bill in the Florida House right now that would create a pilot program. It would be a charter school district pilot program. This would mean that certain traditional public schools would be granted the same autonomy that charter schools have. So it's kind of an interesting idea. It would allow principals to have more control over their schools, but they would have to set certain goals and achieve them in order to have fewer restrictions and have more autonomy.
Well, that does sound like an innovative idea. I know the bill is backed by this Manny Diaz of Hialeah here in Florida. Now, it says here that Florida now has over 600 charter schools in its state. Is that a good number?
That is a good number. That is definitely a good number. Florida, I talk about all the time what a great job you guys do as far as choice is concerned. I mean, you have the voucher program is one of the best in the country. Plus, you have a lot of charter schools. And, I mean, you're sort of leading the fight in the fight against testing right now. So there are a lot of really good things going on there. And I think that it's partially because the state is so reform-minded, you aren't afraid to try different things, which is very helpful in the long run.
And we do have to credit Jeb Bush again. He had figured out a way to get around the direct taxation of people for private schools with his school voucher program, you know, going through businesses as an incentive to reducing their taxes. And I don't know if it's a model program that other states would or could use, but you're right about that. Governor Rick Scott here has been talking more and more about private schools and vouchers. It's becoming a big topic here. There's a huge pushback, as Heather knows, by these school teachers' unions. They are scared to death of vouchers, scared to death of vouchers, because in effect, when you give parents a choice, they're going to choose the best school for their student, for their child, rather. And what does that mean? It means that they're going to look around and typically, it's not usually the local public school. It's usually a private school or, another form of education. So it does scare them to death. But I have to give kudos also to Governor Rick Scott. I think he's a bit on the bandwagon here as well.
Yeah, it's really a great thing to see.
It really is. So anything else? I know that... Now, what has your agenda been? You're over in what is about to be like snowbound New Jersey, aren't you? You're about to be hit by a big snowstorm, if I'm not mistaken. Do you have some plans coming up, Heather, where you're going to be?
I do. Next week, I will be in St. Louis, Missouri for a conference during School Choice Week. And so hopefully the weather will allow that to actually happen.
Yes. And so that will be for School Choice Week. You'll be in St. Louis, and will you be making some presentation somewhere?
No, I'm actually just attending a conference and networking.
Okay. Excellent, excellent. If you were to choose outside of Florida where school choice is doing its best job, is there a particular state that comes to mind right away?
Not a particular state necessarily. I think that there are different pockets of success and then different school choice programs that really need to be isolated. For example, charter schools are doing a lot of great things in New York City, but obviously I wouldn't be pointing to New York City as the example of what the country should look
like
education-wise. There are actually a lot of states that are considering different bills now for charter schools, increasing funding for vouchers. Governor Pence, Bobby Jindal, there are politicians all over the country who are very supportive of these ideas. So, and each one of those states really has a specific area that they are excelling in.
Right. And most Republican governors are usually behind school choice programs, a lot more than Democrats, let's be honest about it. Democratic governors are beholden to the teachers' unions, the money that they get for their party coffers. A lot of it comes from unions, school teacher unions in particular. So therefore, they're on the bandwagon to stifle vouchers, whereas those that are Republicans, it's the other way around. They are not beholden to the teachers' unions, and they generally are in support of voucher programs. And that's just the way it happens to be. And so I would always think that, you know, some of the more, let's say, red states would tend to have better school choice program. I may be wrong about that. I'm sure I am in some cases. But is that generally the tendency?
That's generally the tendency, but there are groups like Democrats for Education Reform who fight very hard to get school choice programs into the mix. They're fighting an uphill battle more than people who lean Republican or Libertarian in convincing people. But, I mean, they are out there fighting the good fight. And there are some Democrats who wholeheartedly agree with school choice ideas based on principle alone, and also based on the fact that they listen to their constituents. So in places where parents are really up in arms about the lousy education that their children are receiving, you'll see Democrats come out of the woodwork and do the right thing, because at a certain point, you have to.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's inevitable, I would think, that people would get on board the idea of school choice and vouchers and charter schools and even homeschooling when they can see that the results are there. Heather, as always, a real pleasure to talk with you. You be safe this week in your trip to St. Louis, and we will talk with you again next Friday.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Heather. Heather Case of the Heartland Institute. All right. We're going to take our break. When we come back, we got lots to talk about. And a little bit later, we're going to talk about deflated footballs and inflating your lungs with smoke. So don't go away.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. With an invitation to all vacationing Canadians throughout Central Florida to join me here on Tantalk for Canada Calling. A daily update of news from home each day, Monday through Saturday at 9 a.m. and 12 noon. That's Canada Calling, a 61-year listening tradition, coast to coast in Florida. Tell your friends and neighbors to join us each day, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. and 12 noon for Canada Calling, here on the Tantalk Network.
Tune in Wednesdays at 8 p.m. to Counseling with Tiffany, licensed mental health counselor. Tiffany is the president and CEO of Safety Harbor Behavioral Health and Counseling Center. Do you battle with depression or anxiety, loss or trauma? Do you have questions on how to interact with friends and loved ones? Do you just need someone to talk to? Call in during this professional, insightful hour. Talk with Tiffany for support. That's Wednesday night, 8 p.m. on the air, because we care.
Do you have questions about relationships, sex, or both? Or are you just interested in these topics? Then we have got just the show for you. Intimate Chats with Lovebirds is a relationship and sex talk show with me, Dr. Chuck Bird, and my wife, Dr. Joanne Bird. We are both board-certified clinical sexologists and relationship experts known as the Lovebirds due to our last name and the work that we do. Listen to Intimate Chats with the Lovebirds every Friday night at 7 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy a lifestyle to fit your needs. From independent living, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing. Our assisted living lifestyle provides 24-hour assistance. You'll enjoy meals in your private dining room, housekeeping, linen and personal laundry service, scheduled transportation, personal security transmitter necklace, assistance with bathing and dressing, and supervision with medication. You'll really enjoy our in-house amenities, including a full-service waterfront dining room, outdoor garden patio, all utilities, including phone and cable, beauty and barbershop, and a library. An outstanding activities program awaits you, and so much more. You'll enjoy affordable luxury living, complete with a million-dollar view. Call today, 727-445-4069, and discover where caring, compassionate service makes the difference.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We're back on Freedom Works. Thank you for joining us this Monday morning, January 23rd. Wow, the month is flying by, is it not? Well, yesterday marked the 42nd anniversary of Roe versus Wade. And pro-life demonstrators by the hundreds of thousands swooped down on Washington, D.C. In support of the right to life. They went to the National Mall in particular. That was sort of the gathering point there. It is an annual march. And, of course, in 1973, a woman by the name of Jane Roe, that was the name that was given to her. Her name was, I think, McCarvey. Petitioned in the state of Texas for an abortion. It was turned down, and she filed it all the way up to the Supreme Court, where she was given that right. Her name was Norma Jean McCarvey, I believe it was. Ironically, she became extremely pro-life after her abortion and went out and had been leading the cause for pro-lifers. after going through the abortion and being the Jane Roe in this case. But this is the 45th anniversary of that decision by the Supreme Court. And at the same time in Congress, lawmakers have been passing an abortion bill as these pro-lifers were in D.C. in their annual protest. House Republicans passed legislation yesterday that tightened restrictions on abortions. The White House has threatened to veto the bill, but in a near party line vote, with some Democrats crossing over by 242 to 179, it would permanently bar federal funds for any abortion. It would also block tax credits for many people and businesses that try to buy abortion coverage under the Obama health care law. In other words, they don't want taxpayers funding people's abortions. I think that makes perfect sense. It makes common sense. We have no right to go against our own morality and being forced to pay taxes for something like that, because it is a behavioral issue, is it not? Should you be forced to pay for another person's abortion? I think not. And there was even a measure to outlaw abortions after a certain number of weeks. But apparently there were some Republican females that expressed some reservations about that, late-term abortions. It's a big day, and I think it's important to recognize every year what the Supreme Court decided. Usually, and the argument against all of this was that the states had the right, not the federal government, in terms of this kind of behavior. I think it goes along the same behavior with gay marriages. I think it's really those issues are in the same philosophy. And I think both of them are states' rights issues. I think it's that simple. I don't think the federal government should be involved in deciding about abortions, and I don't think the federal government should be involved in deciding whether or not marriages between two men or two women can occur. I think that it's a state's right. Anyway, in New York, their state Democratic Assembly Speaker, very powerful, his name is Sheldon Silver. I had never heard of him. However, he's a biggie in New York. He's accused of $4 million in bribing. And this is a federal case. He's accused of soliciting this money over the past 15 years. He's very close to Governor Cuomo of New York. He said, in a statement, "I am confident," this is Sheldon Silver, "that after a full hearing and due process, I will be vindicated of these charges." He's released on $200,000 bond after a Manhattan federal court hearing. Here is U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. I am mispronouncing the U.S. attorney's name there, but it's Preet Bharara, blasting Silver. Bharara says, "For many years, New Yorkers have asked the question, how could Speaker Silver, one of the most powerful men in New York, earn millions of dollars in outside income without deeply compromising his ability to honestly serve his constituents? Today we provide the answer: he did not." It's a 5-count criminal complaint. It's going to shake the government structure in the state of New York down to the roots because of his influence. And he may be in jail for a long time. Some people think his jail term could be a lifetime term, although others are saying he's going to get off easy. But each of the counts against Silver carries a maximum 20-year jail term, 5 years longer than the length of time the prosecutors claim he was collecting his crooked cash. The federal prosecutor said that his approach to getting this bribe money was simple. He did nothing. He just sat back and collected millions of dollars. So, I guess it has to do with basically with pressuring two real estate companies that were doing business with the state of New York to hire a law firm that was regularly funneling money to Silver. That's where he got his name, by the way, from all that money that he was being funneled. That's a joke. Ah, we talked a little bit about this, and this is kind of going hat in hand with what is all this instability overseas, but President Obama had made an example of Yemen recently as a place of stability and where efforts by the United States over in the Mideast were paying off. Well, it turns out maybe not so much. Yemeni's Yemen's president has resigned. His name is Abed Rabo Mansour Hadi. He's resigned under pressure from Shiite rebels. And those rebels have seized the capital. They actually seized it several months ago and had confined this guy to some little room in the castle, I guess. But he was pressured to make a concession speech. And I guess the rebels are winning there. Military officials close to the president, speaking on anonymity conditions, said that Hadi resigned after the this Islamic group called the Houthis pressured him to give a televised speech to calm the streets. So, so much for stability, as President Obama was talking about, in that great country of Yemen. In the meantime, Fox News got into some trouble. Apparently they, remember with all of the trouble that was going on in Paris, with the killings of those journalists that were printing things about the Prophet Muhammad? Well, the mayor of Paris, her name is Anne Hidalgo, says that she may sue Fox News because they insulted Paris with their coverage of so-called no-go zones, supposedly zones only for Muslim residents. Well, there are no such things in Paris, really, as no-go zones. And there was no Fox anchor that talked as if there were, but there were some people that were being interviewed by Fox that said there were no-go zones in there, and Fox let it go without correcting them. Fox has apologized for the fact that no-go zones were talked about, but here's the French president. When we are insulted and when we've had an image, then I think we'll have to sue. I think we'll have to go to court in order to have these words removed. That's what she said. She said, the image of Paris has been prejudiced and the honor of Paris has been prejudiced. Well, she's not going to go anywhere with a suit in this particular case, but she can rattle her chains all she wants. She was making this comment, by the way, when she was being interviewed by rival news network CNN. The executive vice president for news at Fox, his name is Michael Clementi, said in a statement that, quote, we empathize with the citizens of France as they go through a healing process and return to everyday life. However, we find the mayor's comments regarding a lawsuit misplaced. We have made some regrettable errors regarding the Muslim population in Europe, especially in regard to England and France, according to a Fox News anchor earlier this week, who also went on to say that we, meaning Fox, deeply regret the errors and apologize to any and all who may have taken offense, including the people of France. Apparently there was maybe some numbers of Muslims that were in error in terms of different countries in France. So, you know, poor old Fox, they have the biggest news audience, and I guess they get the most scrutiny when it comes to that. Anyway, we're going to take our last break of the show. We're going to talk about what's going on with the New England Patriots, and then we're going to talk about smoking, so don't go away.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
Hi, I'm looking for somebody that can transform my home. Can you do that?
I can do that with my mural creations. This is Jordy the Artist. How are you?
I'm fabulous.
You know, you called 407-310-8589 and you reached me. You might know I have a show here on Tantalk 1340, Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. as a matter of fact.
Fabulous.
You know my number?
No, I don't.
407-310-8589. Hope you wrote it down.
407-310-8589. Got it.
Hey, Dr. Paul here. It's my pleasure to welcome Captain Bill Hine to the WTAN family. Don't go fishing till you hear Captain Bill's show, Artificial Angler. 8 a.m. Saturdays on 1340 a.m. and video on Tantalk1340.com. Welcome aboard with Captain Bill on Saturday mornings at 8, 1340 a.m. and Tantalk1340.com.
Arg, matey. When it's time for lunch, when it's time for dinner, when the show's over, when the day's over, when it's time to chill, where do we go? Over to Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub. It's literally in our backyard, right in back of the WTAN studios at 700 Eldridge Street, just north of downtown Clearwater. Just look for the broadcast tower. Nancy's food and atmosphere get rave reviews. The laid-back patio is a great place to hang out, dine, and listen to live music at night. And Nancy's one of the friendliest proprietors in town. And now, Nancy is serving Sunday jazz brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Brunch served with eggs benedict, crepes, waffles, lox and bagels, shrimp, oysters, and a build-your-own omelet. That's all at Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub, 700 Eldridge Street in Clearwater. That's right where Eldridge crosses the Pinellas Trail between Myrtle and Fort Harrison. Call 446-3717. 446-3717. You're listening to the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works, and before we get into, and I do want to talk for a few minutes about what is going on in the Super Bowl with Big Ed, who is our basically our sports director here and knows more about it than I do. But I want to, I just found a story I got to talk about, and it has to do with poor bakers these days. What to do, what to do. They're getting, you know, when you go to a bakery and you want to put something on a wedding cake or on an anniversary cake or on a birthday cake, well, now you have to be careful because you could be sued if you disagree or you agree. Here's a case in point. There is a dispute in suburban Denver over, and this is in Colorado, over a cake raising a new question about gay rights and religious freedom. If bakers can be fined for refusing to serve married gay couples, can they also be punished for declining to make a cake with anti-gay statements on it? You see what I mean? There's a baker in suburban Denver who refused to make a cake for same-sex couples and is now fighting a legal order requiring him to serve gay couples, even though he argued it would violate his religious beliefs. But now, in a separate case, Marjorie Silva, she owns Denver's Azucar Bakery, Azucar Bakery, whatever, facing a complaint from a customer who wanted to put anti-gay statements on a cake. And he alleges that she has discriminated against his religious beliefs. According to this bakery owner, Silva, the man who came in last year wanted a Bible-shaped cake, which she said yes to. And as they were getting ready to complete the order, the man apparently showed her a piece of paper with some rather hateful words about gay people on it that he wanted written on the cake. Now, why would you do that? I mean, I'm forgetting about the merits of it. Why would you? What's the point of doing that? You know, put it on a cake. Anyway, he also wanted the cake to have two men holding hands and a big X on top of them. So that was the issue. She said no. She said she'd make the cake, but she wouldn't put the message on the cake. And she said, here, I'll give you a pastry bag with icing in it. You can write your own message on the cake. He didn't like that idea, apparently. So, I mean, isn't this getting just a bit too stupid with all of this? I mean, it's becoming funny in a way, but and you're just trying to run a bakery. Come on, you know, can't we just run a bakery? It's like running a candy store. Do we have to somehow get into politics? I don't think so. Anyway, I want to talk about what everybody else is talking about, because Big Ed, who is our sports director at Tan Talk, has a different perspective. Now, let's set the table here. The New England Patriots are in the Super Bowl, as most of you know. But apparently, they have been throwing around in the air footballs that are not correctly inflated and possibly at the behest of their quarterback. So, Ed, both the coach of the New England Patriots, Bill Belichick, and his great quarterback go and face the reporters yesterday. And I'm going to tell you, seems to me that they both knew what was going on, sanctioned it, and were all but, you know, being very tight-lipped about it. Your take.
I think a lot of teams do a lot of things that we don't know about. And as far as I'm concerned, their main objective is that when the balls are underflated, that the quarterback is able to grip the ball better and get a handle on it and maybe chuck it a little bit further. Well, the thing is that if it's so noticeable by the linebacker that intercepted the ball from Tom Brady, which if underinflating them would make him throw better, then why did he intercept it? Or why did he throw a bad pass? But where were the officials? The officials touched the ball on every down. If it's that noticeable, I mean, we're not talking noticeable where, you know, you're done throwing a ball or fourth down and you fold it up and put it in your back pocket. That's noticeable. But if it's that noticeable, why didn't the officials that placed the ball on every down for the offense for the New England Patriots, why didn't they notice it? That's the thing. I mean, you're going to push it on them. I mean, I've got Brad Johnson who said, we used to scuff up balls because there's a sheen on the ball. When it could go to any sporting store, grab one off the shelf, there's a very clear sheen on the ball. It's very slippery. So what quarterbacks would do is they would get a towel and they would rub it. They would scratch it up, rough it up a little bit so they could grab it.
Yeah, but I don't think that, I mean, they do that in baseball. They scuff up a ball.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't think that is as big a deal as taking a football that's inflated to a certain weight and changing that. I really don't. I think there is more of a difference.
So you're going to tell me the New England Patriots the only one that came up with that idea?
No.
So it just means that, I mean, this is just a story to put out there. There was a thing in Denver where they were accused of overinflating the balls for punting. So they would go further because the air is thinner.
That's true.
And they would hang up there forever. So they were accused of overinflating it. And then all of a sudden that went away. So I'm just saying that you're going to tell me that on this one occasion that a linebacker caught a ball and he was able to go, I'm squeezing it. It's supposed to be 14.1, and it's only 12.1. I'm going to have this checked, okay? There are a lot of teams that do a lot of things, and there's little things. Is it really that much of a difference that it's underinflated that much? I would think overinflating, or maybe putting helium in them, would make them go further.
Well,
so
it would
give them an advantage.
If you put helium
in
them,
you'd be throwing 90-yard rockets.
No. Yeah. If you put helium in it, you would release the ball, and the ball would go up in the air and stay there.
But I'm saying if this was such a noticeable thing, why didn't the officials grab it? Why didn't they, every down, you see them, they chuck the ball to each other, they take it, and they put it on the ground. You mean to tell me they couldn't? If they can't tell the difference, then what's the difference?
Well,
and if it is that much of it, you're going to tell me the New England Patriots are the only ones that have done it?
No, I don't think that's the argument.
So.
I'm sure other teams play with the ball too. But it did bring up something I was not aware of. I didn't know that once the game began, that the teams were in control of the football rather than the referees. I would have thought because the NFL has a requirement that the referees inspect all of the balls and check for inflation, that once they do that process, they should maintain the possession of the balls. And rather than give it to either quarterback, they should be the ones handling that situation. Don't you think?
Well, before the game, the quarterbacks pick out the balls that they want. There's like 100 of them or whatever it is. And then they give them to the officials, and the officials check them and make sure they're okay. And then they put them on the sidelines. So at that point, after that point, and before the game, somebody had to have gone by and go, whatever.
Yeah, because
even the kickers were so bad, they have to have a K on the ball now. That means kickers, because the kickers were accused of doing things to the balls,
right,
too. So now the kickers have an actual K on it.
So this brings me back to possession. And once the footballs, even if it, if you want to go through any process that you want where, you know, the quarterbacks, although I wouldn't, I would say that you just put the balls out there. And it's much like in baseball. The umpire throws you a ball, you play with that ball. You don't go, oh, I don't, you know. Now, I know that they can throw the ball back to the umpire, but generally speaking, if the umpire feels the ball is right, you got to use it. Now, why this area of possession, and perhaps the NFL will now enforce it more, that the referees, or just hire somebody to be in possession of the ball and make sure, you know, and you know, both teams use the same ball then too, right?
Right.
Rather than, oh,
No, they don't use the same ball. Each team has different ones.
That's what I mean. Yeah, they should use the same ball, though. That's what I'm saying. You know, because...
Well, they're giving the quarterback that little bit of leeway. You like this one, you like this one, you're going to rough it up a little bit, that's fine.
It turns out that they are playing with the football in, let's be honest. We both know that Tom Brady... Oh, yes, we got to get to our top 10. You're right, Ed. Tom Brady... Don't tell me he didn't direct those balls.
I didn't say that.
You didn't.
I'm just saying.
And I'm saying he did.
If he did, there's more.
I'm sure.
If there's one, there's more.
All right. Well, we've got to get to our top 10, as much as I like this topic. And by the way, these are the top 10 states, according to Wallet Hub, with the highest smoking cost, total cost per smoker, and total income per year. So here we go. Number 10. Washington, the state of Washington, the total cost per smoker, I guess this is a, I don't know how this works.
It includes taxes.
Income loss.
Okay.
Income loss is $1,671 you lose in income in Washington. And the total over a year, I guess, I don't know. Anyway, $10,000+ in Washington. Number 9, across the country to Vermont, where those figures are about $1,700 in total cost per smoker and a total of about $10,500 in income loss. Number 8, Washington, D.C. Is number 8. It's got about $1,747 in total cost per smoker with about $11,500 income loss. Number 7. Hawaii, all places.
Everything's
right. Yeah, but, you know, they raise taxes on everything there. Are we down to 1 minute?
No, we've got a minute and a half.
Wow. So number, we'll go right down to the next one. Number 10, 9, 8, number 6. New Jersey, where they're going to have all of the storm. New Jersey's got high taxes. $1,874 total cost per smoker. Almost $12,000 a year in income loss. Number 1, 2, 3. Number 5. Rhode Island, about $1,900 and $12,400. Number 4, Massachusetts. These are all in the Northeast. Mm-hmm. Almost $2,000 in cost per smoker and $12,400 in income loss. Number 3, New York. Figured almost $2,000 and $12,570. Number 2,
30 seconds.
Connecticut. Yeah, Connecticut, $1,900 and $13,106. And finally, number 1 is...
We don't have a long drum roll.
Alaska, $2,000+ and $10,000 income loss. There you go. Don't smoke. Freedom works. Talk to you Monday.